affected by the red, the black, and the green with the key city.
Right!
Let the dollar circulate.
Let the dollar circulate.
Oh, it's gonna circulate.
Circulate, circulate, circulate.
Let the dollar circulate.
Oh, it's gonna circulate.
Circulate.
500 and it's all the more. I gotta get it so I can give some. Hey, that's why all the wrongs, how I do it. So I can give some. I'll give it.
Let the dollar circulate.
Let the dollar circulate.
Welcome back to the Black Is Break with yours truly, KC Layman. We have a beautiful round table jumping off tonight. Tonight's guests are BI team members Chris Layman, Toria Williams, John Wood, Mr. and Mrs. CEO, and special guests Craig Stewart, who is a writer, and Portia Taylor of Black Girls Ride and Spring Cart Designs. And tonight's topic is Jordans, the impact of a sneaker on a generation. And the reason why this topic came to the table was from one of the podcasts that me and Mr. Layman listen to pretty frequently called Mr. Moody's Neighborhood, Mr. Moody out of Atlanta. If you don't check him out, you should check him out. He has an awesome show happening, him and Cousin Ed and DJ Natural down there in Atlanta. And they did a podcast about the Jordans, the most recent Jordan that came out, and the fact that there were like lines and just scores of people waiting overnight to buy these tennis shoes. And Moody posed the question, why is it we can get black people to go and stand in line to buy tennis shoes, but we can't get them out the house to vote? I thought it was a good question. And, you know, the Jordan brand specifically seems to be a shoe that drives everybody crazy. It's like when it hits, it's the thing. Everybody got to have it. And everybody that has to have it can't always afford it. But people will somehow manage to find a way. So I wanted to know what the family thought about that. What do you guys think about the Jordans? And just if we look at this on a larger scale in our community, consumerism, we tend to buy a lot of high fashion, name brand, expensive stuff, and everybody can't always afford it, but we make a way. Why is it so important to us? And I'm speaking to myself too. I have my Gucci's and Louis in my closet. You know what I mean? Once upon a time, not buying them in this economy, but you know, we have them. Why do we do that? Why do we do that?
Well, in my opinion, and this is John Wood, by the way, when you talk about the Jordan tennis shoe, what you're talking about is something that simply epitomizes the way in which our priorities tend to be misplaced, I think, as black people. And look, it's not as if there's anything wrong with buying an expensive pair of sneakers if you can afford it and if you already have the things you need, if perhaps you're getting good grades in school or taking care of business and whatever other ways that you should be. But the fact that it is so, I think, so difficult for us to make ends meet in so many other contexts, so difficult for our kids, and not just putting the blame on them. This is a cultural problem, but so difficult for us to raise generations of young people who excel in school, who I think put their noses to the grind in the way that is going to benefit the community and the culture as a whole. And yet we can always find a way to get these tennis shoes, or, you know, if we can't buy them, you know, kids will steal them. We'll fight for them. In some places, as you mentioned, people, you know, will literally kill for these things.
Yeah. And that
know?
Was another situation. There was a young man who was shot, I think, the day the shoes came out.
Right.
18-year-old.
Right, right, exactly. So there's a lust for material things, I think, in our culture. It's, by the way, this is an American problem generally, but in black culture, it's become pervasive to, I think, a poisonous extent.
This is Mr. CEO, and I agree with, you know, things that John is saying about how these sneakers and material things have just become such an overwhelming thing for our community. And it's not just our community. I mean, it's everybody as far as the sneakers are concerned, you know, but within our community, because, you know, a lot of our young African-American males and females too are below the poverty line, if you will, to be out here trying to get these shoes and knowing that they really have other things that they need to get or should be doing with their money other than riding shoes. It is sad that the masses will go and do whatever it takes to get these shoes, but not do whatever it takes to acquire an education or to better themselves, you know, outside of the material things. So it's just real, I don't know, like you said, it's kind of like a disease. It's just kind of started from one thing and just blew out of proportion to where, you know, everyone feel like they got to have these shoes. And I don't even know if it's a media thing or it's just like, you know, just that, you know, cult phenomenon that just like, you know, it just blew up into more and more. And it's like, you know, they become so rare or the shoes become so expensive. It's like, oh, I got to have it. I got to have it. But, you know, like myself, I am a sneaker head, but I don't consider myself a sneaker fiend. So whereas I have to like go do whatever it takes to buy each and every shoe that comes out. You know, there are certain shoes that I like. And I'm like, if I have the money on me, or if I can accumulate the funds by the time the shoe comes out, then I'll try to get it. If not, you know, oh well, you know, on to the next. You know, like, for instance, there was a pair that I wanted to get that came out a couple years ago. And I went online, waited online at midnight to get them. And then the internet crashed, so I couldn't get them. And I was just hurt. And then I went to try to go to the store to get them. And like the last one, it just got picked up. And I'm like, man, this just shoe just ain't for me. So I took my $200 and bought three pair of sneakers, you know, instead of getting that one and just, you know, and kept it moving. But, you know, it's just one of those things where it's just like, you know, we just fall victim to it, and it's, you know, it's not like a shoe. It's not necessarily always a shoe thing. You know, it's all kinds of stuff.
It can be anything.
It can be anything. You just fall in love with something so much that you feel like you got to have it. You got to be a part of that group that has this exclusivity. And it's like, you know, I don't know really how to explain it. It seems like
once everybody has them, it loses its exclusivity.
Yeah. I also think it has something to do with the lack of financial knowledge. I was talking to someone yesterday who just turned 30 and he's not black. And he was talking to me about the stock market and how he's invested in the stock market. And I was low key kind of like embarrassed because I couldn't go back and forth with him. He's not richer than I am, but he's made investment. And he's like, well, when I sold my stock in Apple so I think a lot of it has to do with lack of knowledge. We get to a point where we feel like we're successful. And so we want to show the world that we are successful. And the only way we know how to show our success is through materialism and throwing it on our children. Where in the long run, when I sat here and talked with this man, and I'm older than he is, and I'm like, wow, he's giving me knowledge. And, you know, we think, well, I learned from him, like, yeah, you know, to buy stock now, you need a little bit of money. But I'm thinking of all those Gucci bags and Louis bags and things that I've purchased that I really could have invested in me. So I think it's like a lack of knowledge because we don't, as African-American, we don't often sit and talk about, you know, investing financially so that my grandchildren will also reap the benefits of my financial, you know, I wouldn't say wealth, but who would reap the benefits of my financial stability at this point in time. It doesn't seem like something we're looking for generational. It's real, like, on the spot. I got it. Let me buy it. Let me spend it. And let me show you I'm successful.
And that almost makes me wonder if the being consumers, being a heavy consumer, if that's something that's generational. So, like, if mom was a big shopper and grandma was a big shopper, does that then in turn make the next generation a big shopper? And then by us shopping so much, are we now showing that to our kids? Like, what's important is what you got on or what you're driving. And then how do we, I guess, once you have the knowledge, do you then make a turn or do you just say, hey, I'm going to keep doing what I've been doing?
I think what you said was a good point that, you know, if something that our parents did, you know, will it just trickle down to the kids or whatever? And I think, you know, what you said was, with, like, my mom, she wasn't necessarily a big spender, you know, because we really couldn't afford to spend like that. So, you know, I think until I'm not out there just buying, you know, whenever I get some money, I got to go out and get some. You know what I mean? If it's not, if I got other things that need to be taken care of, you know, then that's where that money's got to be allocated to. So, you know, I don't necessarily feel like, you know, I have to have it. You know, I want it, but, you know, if I don't got it, I'm not going to get it. You know what I mean?
And I don't feel incomplete.
Like I said, it's on to the next, whatever. Like, you know, shoes come and shoes go. There was a time when we were in high school, you know, when I wanted to get those shoes and couldn't, and now they come right back. So who's not to say that I can come back, you know, 20 years from now, maybe I'll have some more money. I'm like, oh, that shoe's back out. Now I can go get it, you know? Mm-hmm.
So, this is Portia.
Hi. There's a couple of things that I can help clue you guys in on. My background is with Adidas. I was with them for 9 years in marketing and entertainment promotions. So, there are things that the companies do to create this fury for the product, okay? And there's a couple of different things that we can start with. First, let's start with the retail therapy that our entire people engages in, mm-hmm. trying to rebuild our self-esteem after hundreds of years of being beat down and told we aren't, we can't, we shouldn't. So when we got to the 70s, and the civil rights movement was really kicking in, and our parents were the beneficiaries of a lot of the government jobs and a lot of the stuff, the first thing that they were able to do was to lavish on their kids. Mm-hmm. And then when you get to the 80s and the crack epidemic and we lose most of our black men to the prison system, well, the first thing that mom can do is go buy her son, if nothing else, a new pair of shoes. Mm-hmm. You know, in place of that male figure. Mm-hmm. And then when we start to be able to do for ourselves and you get beat up at work, the first thing you do is take your check and go hit the mall and make yourself feel better.
Right.
So we're still living that retail therapy through the generations. Mm-hmm. Now, deal with the fact that these sneaker companies know that we are, matter of fact, they have categories. They have brand marketing categories for us. We are called the aficionado. If you market to the aficionado, they are the tastemaker. So you market to the black community or the urban community first. Once they have soaked up the exclusivity of the product, it will then trickle down to middle America, probably through lower price points, because mom in Idaho is not going to buy her son the $200 Kobe Bryant shoe, but she will buy her son a relative $60 lookalike from Big Five. You see what I'm saying?
Right, right.
And that's their real moneymaker. Mm. Okay? The shoe, the Jordan that you guys are talking about, is only available in maybe 5,000 pairs right. in the world.
Okay.
And they target specifically where those pairs are going to be. Let's take it out of Jordan. Let's talk about the new shoe of this week, the Foamposite.
Yes.
The Galaxy Foamposite. Okay, this shoe is $250. There have been lines for since Sunday of kids lining up to get this shoe. Only 30 pairs are available in certain stores. And in some states, only 15 pairs are available in the state. So now it's not even about can I afford the shoe?
Can I even get it?
Am I even good enough to be in line to get the shoe? And then you got people that are just the new hustle is I'm gonna be in line, I'm gonna get the shoe, and then I'm gonna eBay it
and sell it
and flip
right.
it like it's property.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So the sneaker has become property,
right,
or stock,
right,
if you will. So you know there are certain levels to the game, but at the base level, there's always the kid saying, I need to be the one in school with this shoe, hook or crook, which is why in some of these lines that people are forming, you get a gang that just roll up on somebody in line like we in front of you. Or better yet, catch them on the way to the car like run me your shoes or run me your Xbox during Black Friday.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know what I'm saying? The products are interchangeable, but the marketing is still the same. We're going to make a very little limited amount. And by the way, the Jordans, they only cost $15 to produce.
Right.
So the same shoe that they're selling for $250 is costing physical, and really hard cost is $5. $15 includes shipping and marketing.
Okay.
You see? So that's why it's hard for me, even coming from that background. I see shoes I want all day long, but I'm allergic to buying them now because I know what goes into it and what comes behind it. But there's still a piece of me that has grown up as a member of the Jordan era that says, yo, I need to be in the hottest, freshest.
And Portia has nice kicks.
Yes, she does. Yes, she does. Her shoe game can battle a lot of people's shoe game. But
I mean,
CEO has good shoe game, too.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, after, okay, my shoe game got ridiculous to the point where I had to buy a storage unit that I pay a monthly fee.
Wow.
On, right? I have 585 pairs of shoes. Right? That's bananas. I will never, that is 2 years of never wearing the same shoes twice, right? Bananas. But after 9 years at a sneaker company and in being entrenched in what is considered exclusive, limited edition, you know, I've a pair of $10,000 shell toes, handmade Italian leather suede bottoms in a white leather case. Now, as I sit here talking about it, everybody's eyes are like, damn, I want to see those.
Tell me you got the Patrick Ewing.
Of course, I got the Patrick Ewing. I got the Patrick Ewings in 10 different colors.
And the Stan Smiths.
Of course, I got the Stan Smiths in 15 different colors. That's how they do it. It's, and the thing is, it's the same shoe in different colorways, but we're going to release it different season. We haven't changed anything but the colors. And you guys are going to clamor for it every single time.
Here's a question I want to put out there, because a lot of people, especially after this child was murdered, said that they felt like Michael Jordan should step in and say or do something about this situation. How do you all feel about that?
What could he say? What could he do?
And remember, you know, this isn't new. People have been dying over his shoes for decades now.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, so if he were to bury every kid that passed away because they rocked his shoes, I mean, that's a lot to put on one man.
Right. Absolutely.
And it is a business for him, so.
I mean, it's a business. It's definitely a business. I honestly can't say that I think Michael, the only responsibility Michael has to the community is what he's done as a philanthropist and giving back. You know, when it comes to, because it's the same, if somebody dies over a Benz, over a BMW, they're not asking people in Germany to come with, oh my God, we got to bury this kid, we got to feed his family. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You can't put that responsibility on him.
And I think the biggest difference, too, is that all of us, we can talk about all the material things that we bought, but somewhere along the line, our parents invested in us, so we know that we're more than that. Right. The problem that we're seeing right now are that children, no one's really investing more in them other than what they look like on the outside. And right. That's the bigger problem. When you know you can't afford it and you see parents at Christmas time spending the last penny and saying, I know I can't buy it, but they're doing it. They're not instilling in their kids. So we just heard Portia talk about the 585 pair of shoes, but she's more than that.
Right.
My problem is the kids, they don't believe that they're more than that shoe. Once, if hard times hit your family and your parents really, really can't supply that, that kid is done with.
Yeah.
They don't believe they're worth anything anymore. And that's where, like, my issues come in, where parents and adults and all of us have to step up to the plate and go, you're more than that shirt. You know, you fly with Gucci, you fly with Snoochie, you fly without anything.
And you said something that triggered a thought for me. You were saying how we won't invest more in our kids, but they're getting all the material goods. I was watching a documentary called Food Matters, and one of the people in the documentary made the point that he didn't understand why folks complain so much about eating organically. He was like, families will spend tons of money on clothes and shoes for their kids, but we talk about buying them the best in food and meat. Everybody wants a deal or a discount. Where can I get the cheapest meat? Where can I get the cheapest vegetables? Where can I get the cheapest fruit? And that goes in your body. So what it's doing is far more powerful than anything you could ever put on your body. That really resonated with me as a mom. I think I definitely mentally made a change immediately at that point. We've been shopping at the farmer's market almost exclusively since then, because I'm like, wow, that's very true. Why am I going to the grocery store looking for a discount? But if I'm, you know, if I was looking for that Gucci bag.
I don't want it if it's a discount.
Right. It might not be real.
Right.
We'll return to our regularly scheduled program in just a moment. But in the meantime, sit back, relax, and hear a word from the ambassador of urban podcasting, our big brother. He goes by the name of Mr. Moody. Moody has a podcast called Mr. Moody's Neighborhood that Mr. Layman and I listen to every week because he keeps it raw and honest. Here's his take on tonight's topic.
My parents' generation, they were the fur coat Cadillac generation.
Right.
You know, the women just wanted a fur coat, maybe a diamond ring, and the men wanted that caddy. Or I don't think the black men even wanted Beamers back then. Now we want anything that shines. Like, we want anything that shines. If you remember the movie Shaka Zulu.
Mm-hmm.
The Westerners that came over and they were talking to Shaka, they realized that he was a very influential man, and they was like, wow, this guy is powerful. I mean, he doesn't have muskets, he doesn't have cannons, battleships, but we're really at this guy's mercy right now. And so they were propositioning Shaka with something, and I can't quite recall what it, but they were propositioning him with something. And Shaka asked him, he said, have you ever heard about the, do you know why a monkey can't resist shiny objects? It was something to that effect. And they were like, well, what are you talking about? Why? What are you talking about? He said, if you want to, what's the easiest way to catch a monkey? The easiest way to catch a monkey is to put a shiny object in a cage. Mm-hmm. And even though that monkey knows that that object is a trap, he sees the cage. He understands the consequence of reaching for that object, but there's a thirst inside of him that he must have that object. Mm-hmm. And he will reach for that object and actually get trapped in the cage. He knows the peril,
right?
But he will reach for that object. I found that we, not calling us monkeys, but I found that we suffer from that same disorder. When you, if you drive by a social services office, or if you go through, go in a supermarket where people have WIC and assistance and all that, one thing that most of them would have in common, especially African Americans, they are always fly as shit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they, listen, they understand that that shiny trap in a cage. They know that that $200 could have better been spent for a computer class or trying to get yourself up out of this hole, but they become comfortable with it, and they're willing to walk right into that trap, and the trap is keeping them dependent. Mm-hmm. So I think the severity of it, it just gets worse and worse, because you didn't hear too many stories about your grandparents or your parents. You didn't hear them getting shot and killed for fur coats.
Mm-mm.
We hear about these kids getting shot and killed for sneakers.
Right.
It gets more severe as the generation goes. And what's so sad is that they are literally telling us, they are showing us with their actions. They are saying, we really don't give a fuck about y'all. Y'all are the most ignorant, the most powerful consumer in the world. Y'all have the most spending power, but y'all are so ignorant that we will continually disrespect you by putting out these sneakers. And we know it's going to be 1,500 of you coons at the mall, but we're just going to put 200 pair of sneakers in there to create this whole, we want pandemonium.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't care who gets shot. We don't care who gets killed. We know that you guys put materialism first. So right. we are in effect, we're reaching for that the shiny object in the trap.
Mm-hmm.
And I fear for the next generation. When you and I are perhaps too old to do anything about it or gone, I literally fear for the next generation, because these little niggas might have laser guns by then.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's going to go one of two ways. Either they're going to, you know, the consumerism is going to consume them,
mm-hmm.
or there's going to be some thwarting of the powers that be that are trying to program them through marketing. I'm hoping it's the latter.
You can find Mr. Moody on the My Next Door Neighbor social network. You might be on Facebook. You might even be on Twitter. But you definitely want to add one more social network to the list, and that's www.mynextdoorneighbor.net. Sign up today, create a page, make new friends, network. It's all about urban podcasting in 2012. And make sure you check out Mr. Moody's Neighborhood every Thursday night. Now, back to our show.
I think that goes to what Tori was talking about, which I agree with entirely, incidentally. We are invested in appearance so much more than we are in substance, you know. We measure our self-worth by how we appear. What does our shoes indicate about us in terms of status, or our car, our clothes? You know, I don't want to invoke the phrase nigger rich, but I got to.
Seems because appropriate.
It is. And to what Portia was saying about the strategy of the industry itself, we know, of course, because it's the corporation's job to think this way, that they understand how to market to us and how to use us to reach a broader market, you know. Black Americans are disadvantaged in so many ways in the eyes of society in general, but we have sort of found ourselves as as being stationed as the nation's trendsetters when it comes to what's popular in fashion and entertainment. But I think the thing that's frustrating to us isn't so much the fact that we're marketed to in this way, but the fact that we are so susceptible to this marketing. And there's a bit of a vicious cycle at work here, because earlier, Tori, you were talking about how a lack of financial education makes us susceptible to this sort of overly materialistic consumer behavior. And I think that's true. On the other hand, the fact that we are so susceptible to that sort of behavior means that true financial education is, at the same time, difficult to come by because of that. You know, it cuts both ways. Again, it's a matter of, I think, refocusing our priorities as a people to be more oriented towards understanding how to best make use of our money. But to know that, we have to be educated, and we have to draw back from the idea that we can be defined by the way we appear. I just got a haircut, and I like to say that I am not my hair. my hair was down.
Indiari.
So I was just like, oh, man, he did cut his hair. Didn't he?
And, you know what? And that's, John, that's a really strong point, too, because on one hand, the financial literacy doesn't seem to be as accessible to our community as to others. But at the same time, we're living in the most accessible time period ever when it comes to information because of the internet. So it's very ironic. I think people are just not tapping into it. They themselves are not literate, so understanding that information is challenging. And again, if this is something that we're saying is generational, if mama wasn't in the stock market, then I don't even know where to begin figure it out for myself.
It's definitely generational, because I think back to like pre-baby boomers. My grandmother was able to leave something to all of her grandchildren and her children. Mm-hmm. But it speaks to the times where they were so scared that they didn't go out and blow their money the way we do. So then her children, my parents, they got a little taste of success and they spread it on us. But it's definitely, because you think about pre-70s, you know, my grandparents owned their home, owned a car. But, you know, when we were cleaning out the house, we were finding like money orders all around the place, you know. And she saved, and not only did she save, but to be able to leave stuff for your grandchildren, and she had like 8 or 9 grandkids.
Right.
How many of us could speak to that today? Yeah. You know, we're struggling to make sure we can pay college for our offspring, let alone, you know, grandchildren.
Right.
You're thinking I'm leaving cash for grandchildren as well?
Right. I mean, even our parents' generation, because how crazy the economy has been, I think a lot of folks are not even thinking about trying to leave liquid cash to future generations. They figure, oh, you'll inherit the house. That's about all I can do for you, because I need to use my money to take care
of me. And y'all can fight over it.
Right. You know, it's a different time. It's a different, very different time. Well, anybody have anything to say in summation about Jordans and their impact and consumerism in general?
I would probably just say that style, it doesn't have to be a crippling expense. You know, there's nothing wrong with looking good. I like to look good. I mean, you know, I like to think I'm presentable. Yeah, we should really, I think, actively rebel against the idea that this really matters so much on behalf of our children. You know. And it just goes to the larger idea that you know, our role models need to be, I think, people who are not making this idea that appearance and flash and, you know, bling bling and this, that, and, you know, money and things that are not really truly substantive unto themselves, that these things matter so much. What our children value is the ultimate reflection of what our culture values. And if this is really a problem in our culture, the obsession over Jordan's material things to the point to where we kill for them, then I think that says a lot about us, and we should think about it.
Hmm. Well, on that note, we thank you so much for joining us. Please check back in for the next Black Is Break.
Everybody's looking for glory. Yeah. Let the dollar circulate. Oh, it's gonna circulate. lucky lady.